Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Dairy on the Air. I'm Lucas Lynch, and I serve as CEO of Midwest Dairy. And today I'm here with two very special guests, Chad Vincent with Dairy Farmers of Wisconsin, where he serves as CEO, as well as CEO of the Dairy Alliance, Doug Ackerman. Gentlemen, welcome to the program. And for starters, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Sure. Well, this is Chad. I've been in the checkoff world now for a little over 2 years. I came from industry where I worked at Sartori Cheese and helped build their retail business for 7 or 8 years. Before that, I ran businesses across the country. So I was like president of Miller Brewing Company Asia, where I built businesses from India to China. I've run CPG $500 million businesses and family-run businesses, but now I'm here working on the checkoff to help the farmers.
And this is Doug. I got my start in advertising agencies. So actually, as we're sitting in a conference room in Dallas, about two blocks up the road was my first job here at Tracy Lock Advertising in Dallas. I spent about a dozen years agency side, spent a lot of time working on restaurant clients. I managed co-ops for Pizza Hut. A lot of restaurant work was involved in there. I had a little niche growing up working in restaurants and then got a degree in marketing and went into advertising for restaurants. From there, I went into retail. I worked for about 7 years managing the Publix private label brand, the Publix grocery stores out of Florida. Where I learned a lot about the dairy aisle and helped develop different yogurt flavors and different ice cream flavors and that with Publix. From there, I ran the Florida Department of Citrus for about 4 years and then transitioned over to dairy about 2.5 years ago. So I'm in Atlanta and represent eight states in the Southeast.
Well, Chad and Doug, thank you again for joining us on this program today. You know, I'm reminded, and just listening to your introductions, between the three of us, we all have less than 3 years of experience on the job working on behalf of dairy farmers in dairy promotion and that of checkoff. I know that our boards of directors were looking for the big decision of who to hire and bringing to these roles as CEOs yourselves. What is it that you've seen on the minds of the farmers, the board of directors, if you will, that you each report to? What are they looking for?
Well, it's Chad again. I think that from our perspective, the board was looking for a tightened version of the strategy, where in a direction of where we really want to go next, as well as making sure we have metrics in place and how do we really evaluate what we're doing. Because in Wisconsin, we do hundreds, if not thousands, of programs every year. And so many of them have been ingrained, and they're all really good. But you really got to continually look back on the strategy and make sure that you're all in tune with the direction that you want to go, and continually evaluating the programs. I mean, and that takes rigor and time to really drive into. So to me, at least at my local level, that's really what I think our board was looking for.
Yeah, I will kind of second what Chad said as well. And then in the Southeast with my farmers, I think a lot of what my board of directors will tell you is they saw what happened when Dairy West brought in Carrie Ann, and then when Midwest brought you in, Lucas, and kind of saw the changes of what the grassroots up focus that was being brought in and really helping to dive into the unique needs of the states and regions that you all represented and then bringing that forward to the national level. So, and really just taking a business approach to doing things. And there's a lot of programming. There's a lot. One of the things that caught me really by surprise was how many different moving pieces there were in the dairy industry. If you look at how the different groups and, for lack of a better term, bureaucracies that are involved learning the industry and trying to understand how they all work together and or should work together and putting those pieces together to bring the best possible return to your farmers. So just being able to evaluate all those pieces and like Chad said, bring a real business acumen and regimen, strategic way of thinking about it and moving forward.
Yeah, and another piece from our standpoint is that they really wanted to become much more integrated with everybody else. They really wanted to have a stronger voice and stronger participation at the national level with DMI, as well as partnering up with the other states. And so I think that that's, that to me, that leads kind of into the next thing is taken a hard look at what we were doing on a national level. And I think that's part of what, you know, when you're seeing four or five of us new folks coming in with really fresh eyes, is taking a hard look at how do we really play on a national and local level.
You know, looking at the partnership, I mean, you spoke to it a little bit earlier. For our listeners, whether you're a dairy farmer or potentially even a consumer that's finding this conversation of interest, Chad works on behalf of the dairy farmers in Wisconsin. Doug has 9 states of the southeastern part of the country. And our organization is really Midwest Dairy, which represents about 10 states from north all the way down to Oklahoma. And it's really one of those opportunities that we have. In some cases, we have cows in rural agriculture, but in Doug's case, you've got nearly 60 million consumers in your geography, but not as many cows as there used to be. And so it's getting the milk to market, but doing it domestically, but also being in positions to play internationally. And the local and national partnership is really critical. And, you know, Chad, I'll have you speak to this a little bit. I mean, the manufacturing or the processing size and scale in Wisconsin, just for a fact, you know, we're about 2/3 the size of the milk production of Wisconsin alone, and that's speaking on behalf of 10 Midwestern states. And so each of our regions has very different needs. When you talk about the export market or you talk about the domestic market, in Wisconsin, you eat what you produce. Want to talk about that?
Yeah, I mean, so like in Wisconsin, we eat our milk, right? So 90% of the milk in Wisconsin gets turned into cheese. And so we have a national Wisconsin cheese brand, and we have folks, on a national level, we're all doing kind of the same things, right? We're focused on trying to build trust and sales for milk. And when you look at it from that level, this should be pretty simplistic, but boy, it's really complex. This is a really complex model and you really have to have bright and engage people on this to make sure that all this stuff works. But so making sure that, you know, we're all playing together and on a national level, kind of executing the same programs. But when it gets down to the state, you know, the way that I work in Wisconsin with, you know, 8,000 dairy farms and $45 billion in economic value coming out of the state's dairy, you know, half of our total ag output for an ag state is very different than what Doug has to do with 60 million consumers. I have, you know, 5 million people. He has 60 million. And so how do we all make sure that we get the word out, build the trust, build the sales in our territories, but also in the country as a whole?
Absolutely. I think one of the big issues that we face in the Southeast is we're about 20% of the population, just under 20% in our area, and then we have about 4% of the production. It's, you know, a lot of what we talk about too is the need to really stay market focused, and I think that's what really is a lot of the value that's brought in with each of us bringing our viewpoints from our own unique areas of the United States too. We bring that grassroots approach and the different things that we're talking about. I know for us, we talked about the industry as a whole. We're really struggling with processing right now. There is no manufacturing. We're a straight class one market. And with the issues with the Dean's closures that have happened, we've got problems with milk not being delivered to grocery stores and milk not being delivered to schools. And when you're evaluating your current programming and you've got, you know, 30 to 35% of your current spend being focused on the youth market and working in schools, and then you've got difficulties getting product to schools, just trying to understand this beast that we've all kind of inherited and where it goes from here. And one of the things that we're going to be trying to take a look at this summer is what is it going to take for a sustainability of the dairy industry in the Southeast? You know, with such minimal production and large population and a lot of diesel fuel being spent bringing milk into the area, what would it take for us to sustain the industry here in the Southeast and then also to eventually grow it? So that's going to be something that we roll out this summer and look. So it really kind of goes beyond just the basic consumer focus for us right now, just trying to figure out, in addition, keeping that market focused, but we're getting to the point where it's how do we get product to the customers in some instances.
You know, it is a little bit crazy to think about. In the last almost 4 decades of work that we've been doing on promotion and building demand, the fact that where the consumers are, there's now logistical situations or concerns that are very real. And you know, if you're not minding the storefront, who is? And I think that's really what you're speaking to. And, but that also speaks to opportunity. And so if you are listening to this, I would say, know that, you know, all progress is change, but not all change is progress. And being very mindful of the fact that what got us to here as an industry won't get us to there. Whatever there is that's next, you know, if you don't have to look any further than online grocery ordering, what does the online opportunity look like for us? But also, what does it look like to have permission? You know, we talk a lot about sales. How big of a deal is trust with today's consumers? Because we work for farmers. We assume there's a lot of trust, but what's the reality in the marketplace?
Well, I mean, if you take a look at the research, and that's honestly, you know, if you're sitting outside and listening to this, the, you know, I've worked at Fortune 25 corporations with massive market research resources, and the skills and capabilities that we have nationally and in the states and regions, it's on par with the best in the world in terms of understanding the consumer, understanding what's going on. The great thing for us is that the people trust farmers, and they trust dairy farmers, and so that's why we keep trying to make sure that we try and find farmers that have time, but also can speak the message. Because, you know, coming from us as a marketing organization, it's one thing, but when you have a farmer telling you what's going on, people turn, you know, put their phones down and they look up and they listen. But it's hard being a farmer, because when you put yourself out there, there's a lot of groups that like to take shots, right? It's that Facebook world where it's a risk to put yourself out there. And I think that's where a lot of the pressure and stress comes from the farmers. When you look at the absolute numbers, man, I would love to own a business that had the metrics and the numbers of people that like and trust farmers and what we do. But when you're day in and day out trying to survive from the low pricing for years, and then when you go online at night to try and maybe tell the story, and it's just this, there's that chirping of, you know, you have this group of people that just loves to stir the pot and take shots. And so a lot of the farmers are like, you know, it's just so stressful that they're not really wanting to go out there and lead with their chin, and I understand that. And that's kind of what, you know, that's why we have people like us in the room that have really strong professional marketing backgrounds that, you know, we have to tell the story. Because if we're not telling the story, then somebody else is. And we have an incredible positive story. Like, you know, once again, coming from CPG background and brands, this is a playground with the authenticity and the what we have to say about our brands and the products and the farmers and all the things that we do that are building trust. It's amazing. Because a lot of places you don't have that, and you have to, you know, you've got to manufacture those stories. We have them in spades in the authenticity. So, but we have to tell the stories.
Absolutely. You know, I think one of the biggest frustrations too these days is that double-edged sword of social media. It's so immediate and so widespread, and you can get a keyboard warrior sitting in a basement somewhere that can, you know, can get a voice in today's environment, and what they say doesn't necessarily have any validity or any reality to it whatsoever, and that stuff can pick up and spread. I think that's in working with our farmers to understand, you know, that's just how reality is, and the technology continues to change, and that accessibility that we're putting our farmers out there, like Chad spoke to, leading with the chin, and there's people out there taking shots, and it's unfortunate, but it is that double-edged sword,
but once again, it's out there, but we have to tell the story.
Oh, absolutely.
We absolutely have to tell the story.
If we don't own our story, somebody else is going to own it.
Yeah. You know, in the work that we all are involved in, working on behalf of the dairy industry, but also on behalf of our corporate board of directors that we each report to, let me ask this question, because it's unique in our job description. Sometimes we can get so busy doing our work that we might almost get disconnected from our constituents, or at least the opinion might be out there that maybe there's a little bit of the ivory tower mindset. What are you doing to really break down those perceptions in the field, whether it's with dairy farmers who are might be on leadership roles or on boards? Or what are you doing really to connect with the grassroots day in, day out farmer that may not really know what we do?
Right. Well, I mean, that's one of the hard parts of the job is making sure that the farmers that fund this, they need to know and they want to know what's going on, but they're really busy and it's really difficult to get them the information. And they also, obviously I don't want to spend a lot of money telling farmers what I'm doing with their money. So we spend a lot, I spend a lot of time personally out with farmers. So like in, last month I was out probably with 5 days having lunch with anywhere from 2 to 75 farmers in Wisconsin, just having a conversation about this is what we're doing, this is what kind of questions you have, what kind of stresses are you under, this is how we're investing your money and this is why, and this is how we think it's valuable, what kind of return we're getting. Obviously some of the programs, we can't tell you quantitatively what the return is. I can't tell you what the return is of us spending, months in schools teaching fourth grade kids about dairy and farming and why milk is good. The research, we'd have to spend millions to get the quantitative research. But I don't run into too many farmers and say, yeah, that's probably not valuable, right? And so to me, it's getting out and making sure you spend time. So, coming out of December, the farmers, we could tell there was a lot of stress in the air and they were really, and since, we got the 90-90 rule in Wisconsin, so 90% of the milk is turned into cheese and 90% sold out this side of the state. So the vast majority of our media has been shifted to outside the state to build the markets where people don't know about us. And so now our ads, they used to be omnipresent, and now they're like, well, where is it? And so that was one of the impetus for us doing the Super Bowl ad in Wisconsin, to just make sure they understand we're here and we're supporting and we are running these programs. And unless you're digitally savvy, you're probably not going to see most of it because we're really going after the influencers.
That's where I really envy Chad. I know for you to reach 1,700 farmers, it wouldn't be too difficult of a task in Wisconsin, given your numbers. I have 1,700 farmers total scattered between 8 states. So yeah. It's a different animal for us in the Southeast. And really what we're trying to accomplish is really working on those individual state boards. We've had to resize. I've got some individual states that I'm down to 30 farms. If you look at Alabama, I've got 30 farms left in Alabama. And as we enter a global economy, and we make no mistake, we are in a global economy now, some of the old views of being able to stay alive by working in our neighborhood and then by staying alive working in our state, now we're going to have to say, how do we stay alive by working in our region? And in a global economy, we can't rely on our neighbors to keep us afloat anymore. But that really is the one of the key issues, getting the word out to the farmers so they understand what we're trying to do. How do we maximize all of our tools? What Chad said, the ability to sit down at the same table with a farmer, and I know, Lucas, you do a lot of this as well. It's invaluable. And what we're trying to do is really build the skill set of our corporate board with the Dairy Alliance and then our individual state boards as well, and realize that we're in the process of developing what are the roles and responsibilities and accountabilities, and starting a mentorship program where we want to bring in the next layer of leadership so that we can develop a kind of a JV, for lack of a better term, team that is the leaders of tomorrow that we can start working and really just try to be involved wherever we can. But as Chad said, really trying to balance the spend on, talking to consumers versus talking to farmers. Both are very, very important to very important target audiences to us, but it's an art, that's for sure.
Yeah. I mean, I had a conversation with my board chair this morning about, how tough the times are and should we be looking at increasing the weight of our marketing in state just so the farmers, and I said, I think we get a higher return if we spend the money in Chicago or Atlanta or New York, but spending in state still gets us a good return. Should we begin investing more in the state over the next 6 months just to make sure that the farmers have a better understanding of really the type of programs that we're running? Because they don't, a lot of them, unless you're on digital, you're not seeing this stuff. So, we rely heavily on the board. I have 25 board of directors, and we rely heavily on them to help us keep the finger on the pulse.
You know, realizing that the dairy community and our consumers, if we are mindful of really what's in it for the consumer, ultimately that takes care of the farmer. You know, it's being where consumers are in the real conversation that they're having, how they're having it. But thinking about the body of work that each of us are involved in, you know, when you talk about cheese in Wisconsin, you know, that benefits cheese as a category across the country. When you talk about fluid milk, we all benefit from a great experience around milk. With your new, fresh perspective, I'd like to just take a moment and say, what have you been kind of blown away by, or what's been the aha that you didn't know coming in that is really something that, if you're a farmer listening to this today, with the benefit of us being new, what is it that you've seen that I should feel good about if I'm a farmer funder?
Well, for me, my biggest aha is, you know, 4 months ago, I spent 3 full days in Chicago with the DMI national staff. So usually I just, you know, in the first year I'm in meetings and you meet like the top layer and they're all wonderful and bright people. But man, you spend 3 days and you dive deep and you meet people 2, 3, 4 layers down. The talent that we have in these organizations is amazing. I mean, the qualifications, the type of skill sets that we have, the experiences are amazing. And I think the second thing is just the transformation in the last 2 years of being able to, with states and regions now really getting engaged with the planning and the strategy and making sure that it's even tighter than it was before, so that we optimize the spend on a national and local level and get the best results we can for all the programs and that we're all aligned.
You know, following Chad is hard.
We can mix the order.
Yeah, I want the question first next time. Yeah, exactly what Chad said as well. I think a lot of there's so much talent and so much passion for the industry everywhere you go. I mean, we're sitting in a conference room in Chicago, and if you walk out and talk to any one of our cohorts across the United States, if I needed anything, I know at any given point, all I have to do is pick up a phone and call. If I have a question about anything, you know, I talk to both of you guys quite a bit. So, you know, I think others would be interested to know how often we talk and the different things that we're talking about and the ideas that we bounce off each other and those kind of things. I think really for me too is when there's been so much bad news lately and so many challenges out there, and especially with the Class 1 market and what I deal with on a daily basis in the Southeast. If you take a step back and you look at the fact that what fluid milk is about an 8,000-year-old product, and you look at the longevity of that product, I mean, that everything has a product life cycle, every single thing out there, and the life cycle of this is absolutely amazing. And all of the bad news out there, when you still stop and you look at the data and it says that fluid milk is in 95% of households, that's an amazing, amazing fact. And our challenge in moving forward is taking that and how do we maintain that distribution and keep the relevance of the product up. I think when you look at it, a lot of what we talk about is, I know there's a lot of folks that want to see that advertising that Chad talked about earlier, and a lot of the questions I like to ask are, you know, well, how much advertising would you have to see, or would it take for you to buy a new VCR? And you think about a VCR, now we're into compact flash memory. VCRs are, I just threw away a bunch of old tapes. I'm kind of a pack rat, so I had a bunch of old VHS tapes I threw out. But, you know, now we're on to DVDs, and now we're on to streaming on demand. So going back and saying, how relevant is that product to consumers today? And asking those same difficult questions about the products that we bring to the table. And you look at what the competition's bringing to the table these days. They're marketing a version of our product made out of pretty much everything out there. And in a day and age where they're making food in a Petri dish, you know, I think relevance is going to be a big issue for us moving forward and a big challenge.
You know, when you speak about innovation recently, you know, as you're clearing out your VHS tapes, it makes me think about even just scanning the channels one night, and I saw Jerry Maguire, and you know, there was an episode where he's pouring out jug of milk for cereal with little guy. And that was 25 years ago. And the jug is basically the same jug. So we think about innovations, and then you look over at the alternative space and you've got phenomenal graphics, phenomenal packaging. And it's not to say that, you know, maybe we've taken it for granted. And it's okay to take a knee and just say, yeah, we've taken it for granted, but what are we going to do about it? And as we work, since we don't really sell a thing, guys, between the three of us, we work with those that do. I'm going to ask you to kind of put the forward-looking lens a little bit. And Doug, I'm going to pitch it to you this time and have you start off by looking at what does future look like? And is innovation and packaging innovation, is that really going to help, or is that just a talking point?
Well, I think we absolutely have to innovate. 25 years ago, wow. I wasn't feeling that old this morning, but now I am. You know, I think innovation is the key. We talk about it a lot. We spend a lot of time, and it's how our product is consumed. It's the product itself. It's the different uses for the product. It's how the customers out there are using us and interacting with us. It's our communication. It's on every single level out there. It's key to our success. And that whole relevance to a consumer, I know I've been shocked lately at looking at one of the big new trends on YouTube, YouTube kids channels, is there's a YouTube channel that has nothing but kids playing with toys. And you can sit down and look at kids now that are watching kids play with toys on a screen, and the same toy is sitting right next to them. In a world where consumers are changing, and they're changing so quickly, staying in touch with that consumer base, staying focused on that consumer base, seeing the changes in how people are eating. There's a lot of new trends. If you look at online and delivery, some of the prescriptive things that people are doing with gene testing and diets they're creating for that. What's the future of the dairy protein itself? We talk about fluid milk a lot. We talk about the importance that fat has brought back from that Time magazine article in 2012. What do we do with the dairy protein moving forward? Something that if you look at the popularity of people staying fit these days and whey protein, something that used to be used as pig food and thrown away, is now something valuable. So I think just to stay on top and to always have a fresh eye, to stay focused on the market and always think about how could we be looking at this differently?
Yeah, you can't ever underestimate the requirement and the absolute must-have of innovation. But I look back and say, in this category in milk, since like early 80s, we've added 100 million pounds a year, right? And we've doubled the size of this thing. And the growth of not necessarily fluid milk, but of milk and its products continues to be almost a straight line growth curve. Now, unfortunately, with that curve also, the price has not kept up to with the value of that. But, to me, the value of the checkoff, being able to help find a home for this continued growth in milk has been a testament to innovation. Now, because there's been a ton of innovation in dairy. In fluid milk, not so much lately. But I think it's going to come, because you take a look at, we're fighting demographics on the fluid side too, right? You go back to 25 years ago, 75% of the families were nuclear, mom, dad, two kids, a cat, dog, neighborhood. You ate breakfast, lunch, and dinner together with a gallon jug or two on the table. When's the last time you sat down with your family more than a couple times a week, because they're off running around if you got young ones, they're out running, playing ballet or hockey or soccer or whatever. And then you also have, 25 years later, we've got the nuclear families gone. It's, very few nuclear families, like only 25% of families are out there. So it makes you have to innovate, right? So the days of having a gallon jug sitting on the table, it's got to be smaller, it's got to be compact, it's got to fit in the car, it's got to be eye appealing so that the kids walk by and they want that instead of the soda or the water or whatever it is. With your resources, we're working with all these guys on a national level to try and help them innovate, because they're under stress too. I mean, the co-ops are under an incredible amount of stress with, you know, capital needs and trying to make sure they keep their farmers' noses above water and all this stuff. So, you know, long-winded, there's innovation that's been happening. You know, you look at what happened in yogurt, you look at what happened with our, you know, with specialty cheese. I mean, that's just skyrocketed in the last decade. But I think we get kind of caught up in the mantra of if fluid milk isn't healthy, then or it's not growing, then the world's really in bad shape. Dairy still is in a great position. Dairy is still growing. We need the price cycle to get better. And we need to keep innovating and pushing that direction.
Well said. And when you think about the solids consumed, I mean, that's another way, if you're listening to this, you know, we can talk about a gallon or a pound, but really the solids overall year over year have been growing since the 1980s. And if you think about it, cheese consumption, and you know this stat better than anybody, in the United States, we're about 36 pounds of cheese consumption per capita. But if you go to Europe, it's over 70 pounds.
Right. There's still growth to be had.
Absolutely.
Still a lot of growth to be had.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we're going to wrap this conversation, but I'm going to bring it back home and just maybe ask you personally, as you look at this role that you're in, serving dairy farmers, being a CEO of an organization, being a steward of the staff and the resources that you're entrusted with, what is it that gets you up in the morning and has a passion for the job?
Well, Lucas and I have a similar background, and the reason why I started working for farmers in the first place was from the military, and just kind of having spent 20 plus years with military service, and I see a lot of similarities between those who serve in that aspect and farmers. I mean, it is a calling, it is a lifestyle, it is a passion. In order to do the work that our farmer funders and partners do, it is, you have to love it, and it has to be in your blood. And getting a chance to help put that forward for these guys, and knowing the situation that they're in and the fight they're up against, there's just no better way in my mind as a professional marketer to spend my time working on. Chad mentioned earlier the story. And I worked in advertising before. We created those kind of stories, and you can't write a story like this. I mean, the story that we have. And when you go out and you spend time with farmers and you walk their barns and see their land, and they tell you about the many generations that are out there. And my mantra is, I'm walking around and I tell my staff all the time, our job is to put one more generation on the farm. That's very simply it. Is how do we put one more generation on the farm? So it's there's a lot of joy. There's a lot of challenges, but you know, there's no better people to work for.
Well, that's great. So for my story on this is spending 7 years at Sartori Cheese and working with their patron farmers. And you know, my dad grew up on a farm. When you're out and you see how hard they work and how well what they do for us. I mean, you know, 2% produce all the food for us to eat in the country. And it used to be, you know, 50% of us had to work to create that much food. And you know, they work so hard, they're not getting a great shake. And when I was dealing with Sartori, I was actually working with the Wisconsin Milk Marketing Board, and I saw what they were doing. And it's so important what the checkoff does. I mean, from the outside, it's kind of hard to really get a grasp on what this does. It means so much, and what we do matters so much that to me, it was an easy choice to be able to jump off of the big corporate jobs to come here and help. And everybody in our organization is here to make something happen good for the farmers, and that's why we're all here.
Well, gentlemen, it's been great to have you on the program, and Dairy on the Air is here where we're trying to have the real conversations that impact the dairy industry. And I tell you what, after the last few minutes, it's clear to me that we're having a real conversation, and we know who we work for. And when we get up in the morning, we know what that work looks like. A lot of trust is given to us as stewards of that investment, but also really bridging and innovating our way to what the future holds. So Chad, as CEO of Dairy Farmers of Wisconsin, and Doug, as CEO of the Dairy Alliance, thanks for your partnership, your leadership, but also your willingness to really challenge status quo. I think that's one of the things, if you're listening, and I think that's really been embraced by leadership nationally and locally, is it's okay to revisit your position if something's changed. And today's marketplace is ever-changing, and it's okay for us to be solid on our strategies, but always revisit and measure, and Frank, the old saying, treasure what you measure, and making sure that we're working on the right stuff. So with that, again, thanks for listening to today. As we wrap this episode of Dairy on the Air, special thanks again to Chad Vincent and Doug Ackerman. My name's Lucas Lynch, and it's been a privilege to be with you today, and it's an honor to serve as CEO of Midwest Dairy. Thanks for joining us. If you'd like to hear more about this episode or other episodes affecting the dairy industry, subscribe to the podcast on your favorite podcast platforms, including Stitcher and iTunes, or you can visit our website, midwestdairy.com. Until next time, thanks for listening.